The night air hangs heavy over the temple courtyard. Oil lamps flicker along the mud brick walls, their flames trembling as if the darkness itself were breathing. In the distance, the slow currents of the Euphrates murmurs beneath the stars. The city sleeps, but the temple does not. Temples in ancient Mesopotamia, they rarely sleep because the gods, it was believed, must be continually attended. A young apprentice kneels beside a basin carved from polished stone. His hands tremble slightly as he pours water into it from a ritual vessel. The water has been drawn before dawn. It's been spoken over, blessed through incantation. It's no longer just merely water. It's become something else. It's become a tool of restoration. Across from him stands the temple's chief exorcist, an elderly priest whose hair has turned the color of ash. In his hand, he holds a tablet inscribed with ancient words, formulas passed down through generations of ritual specialists who understood that the world was full of unseen forces. Some of those forces nurtured life, others disrupted it. The priest raises his voice softly. He doesn't shout. One does not shout before the gods. He calls upon a name, Khusu. The name moves through the courtyard like wind through reeds. To modern ears, the word exorcism conjures images of possession and horror. But in the temples of ancient Mesopotamia, it meant something quieter and more essential. It meant purification. It meant restoration of cosmic balance. It meant removing what had become polluted so that the world could breathe again. The priest dips a reed branch into the basin and sprinkles water across the stone floor, across the temple doorway, across the statue of the god waiting silently in the inner chamber. He whispers the incantation again, Khusu, purifier of heaven and earth, chief exorcist of Enlil, cleanse this place. For the people of ancient Mesopotamia, purification was not simply a metaphor, it was survival. So to understand Khusu, we must first step into the worldview of the civilization that called upon her name. Mesopotamia, the land between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, gave birth to some of the earliest urban societies in human history. Sumerians, the Akkadians, Babylonians, and even the Assyrians built cities, they codified law, they invented writing, and they constructed elaborate temple complexes that served as both religious and political centers. In their cosmology, the universe wasn't stable by default. It required constant maintenance. The gods had created the world out of primordial chaos, but chaos never disappeared completely. It lingered in the margins of existence, seeping into daily life through illness, misfortune, spiral pollution, and malevolent forces. Purification rituals were therefore not optional acts of devotion. They were acts of cosmic repair. Khusu stood at the center of this sacred labor. She was a Mesopotamian goddess of purification and ritual cleansing, associated closely with the great god Enlil, the powerful deity of wind, authority, and cosmic order. Textual evidence describes her as his chief exorcist, a title that carried immense significance within the structure of divine and even temple hierarchies. To call someone the chief exorcist of Enlil was to acknowledge their role in maintaining the purity of the divine realm itself. If the gods required purification, then purity was not static, even for the divine world. It was an ongoing process. Wilford G. Lambert notes that Khusu belonged to a group of deities associated with Enlil's court, appearing together in texts such as offering lists from the Ur Third Period, incantations, and later esoteric explanatory writings. Amongst these companions were Shuziana, Nuska, Nenima, Enugi, Ninsar, and Ninkasi. This group formed part of the divine administration that sustained the functioning of heaven and earth. One text from Seleucid-era Uruk places Khusu alongside Nuska and Isumud, further suggesting that her presence was tied to divine ritual operations and communication within the celestial hierarchy. But perhaps the most intriguing description of Khusu appears in a ritual incantation known as the First Brick. This text was recited during temple renovations, a moment when the boundary between sacred architecture and divine presence required careful management. The incantation describes how the god Ea, who's master of wisdom and magic, created certain divine figures from clay to assist in the ordering of the cosmos. Khusu appears amongst these beings. She is addressed as the chief priest of the great gods, a remarkable title that situates her within the highest ranks of ritual authority. And the imagery here is quite striking. A goddess formed by clay, by the god Ea, entrusted with the sacred task of purifying the domains of heaven and earth. In Mesopotamian thought, clay was not considered to be just merely earth. It was the substance from which humans themselves were shaped. Clay connected the divine, the human, and the material world into one continuous system of creation. Khusu, therefore, embodies something very profound. She is purification arising from the very substance of existing. Her family connections further illuminate her place within the divine order. Khusu's husband was a lesser-known deity named Indagara. Scholars remain uncertain about his precise nature. Jeremiah Peterson suggests that his name may refer to a quote-unquote young breed bull, raising the possibility that he was depicted either as a hybrid creature, a fully anthropomorphic god, or a being combining animal and human traits. Indagara was equated with Ishkar, the storm god, in the Mesopotamian god list known as An, Anum, and with the god Haya in an old Babylonian hymn. And in that hymn, Indagara and Khusu are praised together in a line that reveals the depth of her cosmic function. And I quote it here, "Without whom heaven would not be pure nor earth bright, continual providers of the great meals of An and Anlil in their grand dining hall." The phrase is more symbolic than literal. To provide meals for the gods was to maintain the ritual infrastructure that sustained divine order. If heaven would not be pure without them, then Khusu's work wasn't just considered to be this minor housekeeping. It was cosmic sanitation. The couple also had a daughter named Surkuga, whose name appears only rarely in surviving texts, including a god list from Mari. Though little is known about her, the presence of this lineage suggests that purification itself was conceptualized as a generative divine force. Khusu's role also intersected with other deities associated with ritual cleansing and protection. She's frequently linked to Ningirima and Gira, both of whom appear in exorcistic traditions. Gira, the divine fire, represented purifying flame, while Ningirima functioned as a protective goddess invoked in magical rites. A ritual text known as the Mispi ceremony, used to animate divine statues during temple installations, mentions the holy water vessel of Khusu and Ningirima, and this ritual container was more than symbolic. The Mispi rite involved washing the statue of a deity, symbolically transforming it from carved objects into living divine presences. Without purification, the statue could not function as a vessel for the god. Water, therefore, became an instrument of transformation. In later periods, Khusu, Ningirima, and Nisaba emerged as the primary purification deities invoked in ritual contexts. But what did purification actually mean to the Mesopotamians? It didn't mean moral perfection in the later religious sense. It meant removing contamination that disrupted harmony between humans, gods, and the unseen world. Contamination could take many forms: illness, curses, broken oaths, improper ritual behavior, encounters with death, and contact with certain substances could all produce states of impurity. These states were believed to attract malevolent spirits or divine displeasure. The chief exorcist, known in Akkadian as the Asipu, served as both healer and ritual specialist. His work combined medicine, magic, theology, and even psychology. He diagnosed illness not only through physical symptoms, but through spiritual interpretation. When someone fell ill, the Asipu might determine whether the cause was natural, demonic, or even divine. Ritual cleansing could induce water sprinkling, fumigation with incense, incantations, symbolic washing, or transferring impurity into figurines that were later destroyed. In this sense, purification was both physical and metaphysical. The family says the house has grown heavy, not heavy in the way of stone or timber, but heavy in the way of breath that will not leave the lungs. The youngest son wakes at night crying, insisting that someone stands in the doorway, though no one's there. The lamps burn low and sputter. A clay bowl slips from the mother's hands without reason and shatters across the floor. These things accumulate slowly, like dust in corners. At first, they dismiss it as coincidence, but then the fever begins. It takes the father first. His skin grows hot, his sleep restless, his dreams filled with shadows that press against his chest. Soon, the daughter begins coughing as well, and the goats refuse to enter the courtyard. Now the family knows something unseen has entered their world. At dawn, they walk through the city gates toward the temple complex, carrying offerings of barley and oil. The air smells faintly of river mud and incense. They kneel before a priest whose robe is marked with the symbols of the Asipu, the ritual specialist who understands the hidden language of misfortune. The priest listens quietly. He doesn't rush them. Misfortune must be handled carefully. It's rarely a single thread. It's usually a tangled net of forces. He asks questions about dreams, about sickness, about broken vows, about whether the household has encountered death recently or disturbed something that should have remained untouched. Finally, he nods. "The house is clouded," he says. He orders water drawn from the river before sunrise, untouched by human hands since the moment of its gathering. A basin is placed at the threshold of the home. Reed branches are cut. Incense is burned until the room fills with pale smoke that curls against the ceiling like wandering spirits searching for an exit. The priest lifts the ritual vessel. Inside is the water dedicated to Khusu, the purifier of heaven and earth. He dips the reeds into the basin and begins to sprinkle the doorways, the walls, the beds where the children sleep. Each movement is slow and deliberate, accompanied by an incantation older than the city itself. Khusu, chief exorcist of Enlil, you who cleanse the heavens and brighten the earth, turn away the shadow that clings to this house. Water falls like small rain across the clay floor. The priest moves room to room, whispering words that call upon the goddess who washes away unseen corruption. To the family watching from the courtyard, the ritual feels both simple and immense. Nothing spectacular occurs. No thunder splits from the sky, no demons scream as it departs, but something shifts. The air becomes lighter. The priest finishes the incantation and places a small figurine at the edge of the doorway, a symbolic vessel that's meant to carry away whatever had settled within the house. By sunset, it will be taken beyond the city walls and buried. The family thanks him and offers their grain to the temple, and somewhere beyond human sight, the goddess of purification continues her quiet work, washing the dust of chaos from the fragile world. Khusu presided over the sacred purification process. To invoke her was to restore the balance between visible and invisible worlds. Her presence reminds us that ancient Mesopotamian religion was not primarily concerned with salvation after death. It was concerned with stability in the present world. Life was precarious. There were floods, droughts, disease, and political upheaval threatened constantly. Purification rituals were tools for survival, and through them, the chaos lurking beneath creation could be pushed back, at least temporarily. When we look at Khusu through modern eyes, we might be tempted to see her as obscure or minor compared to more famous Mesopotamian deities like Ishtar or Marduk, but that assumption would miss something very essential. Civilizations survive not only through kings and warriors, but through maintenance, through the quiet laboring of cleaning, repairing, restoring. Khusu is the divine embodiment of that labor. She is the goddess who keeps heaven bright and earth clean. And perhaps that role is more relevant today than we might initially think. Our modern world often associates purification with moral judgment or aesthetic perfection, yet the ancient Mesopotamians understood purification as restoration of balance. It was about clearing what had accumulated, what had become stagnant, and what had disrupted flow. Sometimes purification meant washing a statue. Sometimes it meant cleansing a temple. Sometimes it meant helping a suffering person release whatever unseen force had bound their life in misfortune. In our time, purification might take different forms. It may appear as emotional release, honest reflection, reconciliation, or the quiet act of clearing space in one's own life. The ancient priests who invoked Khusu believed that purification allowed the divine to move freely again. Perhaps that idea still carries wisdom. Perhaps the world always needs those who know how to cleanse what has become heavy. And even perhaps every age needs its own keepers of the sacred waters.